This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, February 13th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead on this edition of Daily Ozarks, a movement in Fayetteville is urging residents to be kind to others, not just tomorrow, Valentine's, but all month and all year long.
Extremely cold temperatures and out-of-the-ordinary snowstorms have many wondering about climate change. We speak to a University of Arkansas researcher about global warming's effects on vegetation.
Plus, two renowned R&B divas perform in the region. Becca Martin Brown tells us what's up and more.
But first, Arkansas lawmakers yesterday heard the first concrete proposals that would alter the state's private option expansion of Medicaid. In a packed joint budget subcommittee meeting, legislators were presented with alternative plans to either apply tweaks to the health insurance program for low-income people or to gradually defund it altogether. Republican State Representative Nate Bell of MENA acknowledged the political divisions regarding the program. Bell presented a plan to bar the state from funding promotional efforts to get people enrolled in the program, which he said was a compromise.
The votes are almost certainly there to not pass the private option. The votes are almost certainly not there to pass a budget bill without the private option. That's an impasse, folks. Do we want to become D.C.?
A proposal presented by Republican Representative John Burris would seek waivers from the federal government on the requirement to provide non-emergency transportation to participants. But, Burris said, the particulars of that waiver are yet to be determined.
Nobody has all the answers, but we know that we don't want to provide, that we want to develop a state-specific plan to address it. And so that's what this waiver allows. Why it's significant is because one of the often debated points of the private option was the wraparound coverage. This, for all intents and purposes, is the only wraparound coverage that is required that we are offering to private option population. It's the only one, and we're getting a waiver to do it the way we want to do it.
Along with seeking the non-emergency transportation waiver, Burris's proposal seeks to widen the cost-sharing pool and create health savings accounts for participants. The Legislative Joint Budget Committee is to consider the proposals today.
And healthcare professionals from the Arkansas Delta are publicly supporting the private option as state legislators decide what to do. The Delta Grassroots Caucus, made up of political, business, and social leaders in regions around the Mississippi River, released a report Tuesday showing broad support from healthcare professionals in eastern Arkansas. Democratic State Representative Mark McElroy represents DeShay County. He says thousands of people have been signing up for the private option in his district.
In our area, it's very rural and a lot of poverty, high poverty right there. And unfortunately, we have a lot of people that can't afford to pay, for hospital visits and things. And a lot of uncompensated care. And if this private option fails now, that I'm afraid it's going to devastate our rural hospitals.
He says the population of his region has been declining for many years, and more demand for health services would help support local medical centers.
Pulaski County Circuit Judge Wendell Griffin is asking Governor Mike Beebe to oppose a recent decision by the Arkansas Board of Corrections to spend millions of dollars to plan construction of a new prison. The 1,000-bed prison itself is estimated to cost $75 to $85 million to build. In a letter to the governor yesterday, Judge Griffin blamed misguided policies of the war on drugs for leading to the imprisonment of people who are not a threat to society.
People who have been convicted to state prisons, it's been documented, in recent years have been placed there because of nonviolent drug offenses. Then we would have room in our existing jails and prisons for violent offenders without having to spend millions of dollars on new prisons.
Griffin is asking Governor Beebe to impose a moratorium on new prison construction in Arkansas. He says money could be better spent helping treat people with addictions.
Republican Congressman Tim Griffin has confirmed this morning he will seek the office of Arkansas Lieutenant Governor. The announcement comes 4 months after he declared he wouldn't seek a third term in Congress in order to spend more time with his family. With Congressman Griffin entering the race, Republican State Representative Charlie Collins of Fayetteville bowed out of the Lieutenant Governor's race this morning and declared he'll instead seek re-election to House District 84. But the Republican primary for Lieutenant Governor will still be crowded, as State Representative Deborah Hobbs of Rogers yesterday announced she would also run for the office instead of seeking the Republican nomination for governor. Griffin and Hobbs joined State Representative Andy Mayberry of Hensley on the Republican side of the race, while former Highway Commissioner John Burkholder remains the only Democrat who has declared a run for the Lieutenant Governor's office.
The University of Arkansas system ranks among the world's top 100 universities in terms of the number of U.S. utility patents received in 2012. The U of A announced yesterday that the National Academy of Inventors and the Intellectual Property Owners Association ranked the university system 48th on a list compiled from data collected from the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. The U of A system universities receive 34 patents for researchers' inventions, with 4 of those patents including inventors at the U of A Fayetteville, 20 patents including inventors at the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences, 9 patents for inventors at the UA Division System of Agriculture, 4 patents for inventors at UALR, and 2 patents including inventors for more than one UA system institution. The UA system was tied for its 48th place ranking with Arizona State University, the New Jersey Institute of Technology, and Texas A&M.
Partly cloudy tonight, lows will be around 31. Tomorrow, sunny. Highs from 54 to 59. Tomorrow night, clear. Lows from the mid to upper 20s.
This is Ozarks at Large. The current Speaker of the Arkansas House is the Republican banker from Cabot, Davy Carter. Roby Brock, with our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, sat down with Carter before the Arkansas legislative fiscal session began this week to see how he thinks the private option debate will play out. It's expected to be the largest budget battle of the session. Roby began by asking Davy Carter what the odds are that it will pass in both the Senate and the House.
The House, 100%, Senate,
confident.
90%. I think the margins are thinner there, but I still think we're going to pass it.
What's the trip up? What is the hold up, I guess, particularly on the Senate end? You've heard all the objections that have been raised. Why is the trepidation? What do you think it is, and how can it be addressed?
Well, in fairness, I have not spoken to the senators who have changed their through support. It seems to me that, well, of course, we're talking, Senator Irvin.
Senator Missy Irvin.
Yeah, she has an issue with the payment structure for the specialist. But, you know, Roby, until we get to the Capitol and until we go through committee, until we have to cast votes, you take things you read and hear just as with a grain of salt, and you get up here and then you start debating those things. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what else we can do, because everything for the large part said or thought was going to happen, all these assumptions, they're all pretty positive. So, I mean, the absence of anything that had developed negatively, tells me that there's more politics involved than the policy, and that's unfortunate because, in my opinion, this is pretty clear that this is what's best for the state.
And the politics are the federal health care law that people have objection to, and the big healthcare.gov rollout certainly did not help things in terms of the overall enthusiasm for healthcare reform in here. So you want to move quickly on a vote on the private option. How quickly do you want to move, and why do you want to move so quickly?
I'd like to see us vote no later than the second week. And I just think it's important because that's going to drive all of the other issues that we're dealing with. I mean, it's $90 million out of the budget if we don't keep moving forward. So we've got to regroup, start from scratch. I mean, that is a lot of uncertainty that we would throw in the mix, and we can't wait around to the end, and there's no reason to wait around to the end. And if you don't know what your position is by now on this issue, you're never going to know. So we might as well tee it up and let the chips fall where they may.
So by forcing that vote a little bit early too, as you know, either at the tail end of the fiscal session or perhaps during the fiscal session, there'll be a filing period for political office that last few days in February 1st, part of March. Obviously, this plays out in Republican primary politics in a huge way. Does it put people on the record that they can't, that they're going to get primaried? They're going to get a Republican challenger. Do you think they're going to get one anyway for their previous vote, so they might as well stay with consistency?
Probably, and I think that is the least compelling reason to in this whole debate. I mean, whether
that's
or not,
how people act.
I understand, but it's just not compelling reason. I mean, I'm tired of being on the defensive about this issue. And, you know, there's such a hot button, hot potato. And this has been so divisive all across the country. Nobody wants to touch it. I didn't necessarily want to touch it either. My colleagues that have like mind with me didn't necessarily want to touch it either. But, you know, I'm tired of apologizing for it. I mean, if I guess back to my point about teeing it up and having some accountability, I'm not interested in waiting to vote for somebody who may or may not have a primary opponent. Mm-hmm. I mean, you either support it or you don't. And if you don't, or you know, vote no and run your race. Or I mean, that can't be the reason why.
You're proud of it because you've seen what other states have done in terms of coming to Arkansas, contacting you guys, emulating what the state did in terms of moving that Medicaid expansion funding into this private health insurance group. Am I reading you wrong on that?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, I'm proud of for a lot of reasons. I mean, I'm proud that we had the political courage to deal with the situation. I mean, it would have been so easy to just look at what was out there, particularly in that environment we had the last session, and just say, you know what, this makes a lot of sense, but it's politically, we just don't want to go there. It's just too controversial. I mean, to overcome that in that environment and the way that was done, I mean, I'm very proud of that. And that stands independent of what you just said earlier, but that it just makes a lot of sense on what we're doing. We can't, for the viewers, I want the viewers to know, we can't make this go away at the state level, at the state capitol.
We can't make federal health care reform.
We can't make it go away. And, you know, once you realize that as a lawmaker, I mean, there's two schools of thought that diverge from there. You can either play the politics, or you can say, well, and recognize it and just go in and fix it and do what's best for, and what you think's best for the people of Arkansas, but not engaging because it's easy politically, mm-hmm. and it's easy to win a Republican primary. I mean, it's very, very frustrating. So, that is not a compelling reason to in this debate.
So there's horse trading going on, or at least talks of horse trading going on, that some members who are still open-minded to voting yes or changing their vote from no to yes for the private option may feel comfortable doing that if there is a promise of some tweaks to the law in the 2015 mm-hmm. fiscal regular session. Give me an example of something that could be tweaked based on some members' arguments.
Well, and that you're right, and there's been some discussions about that, and the devil's always in the details. You know, you talk about a tweak here and a tweak there, and you've got to make sure you're thinking through all of that. But I think right now the discussions have been, you know, basically where we're spending the money, maybe some of the advertising money or some things like that. Mm-hmm. But nuts and bolts things, I mean, frankly, right now as we sit here today, it's too early to come in and make any recommendations for any significant changes because we're just now starting the process. And that kind of backs into my whole argument that it's unreasonable to pull up on this thing right now. We haven't given it a fair chance to work.
That was Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, speaking with Davey Carter, Arkansas Speaker of the House. Support for Talk Business Arkansas on Ozarks at Large comes from AT&T, challenging drivers to never text and drive. No text is worth the risk. More at itcanwait.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at bankozarks.com.
And the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas. Diversity is the key to reliability and affordability. From the state's largest industrial user to a home at the end of a long country road, the Electric Cooperatives of Arkansas serve members with a stable supply of electricity backed up with fuel diversity. Coal, oil, natural gas, hydroelectric power, and renewables. More at AECC.com. And the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas, whose mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent anti-business legislation, regulations, and rules. Learn more at ArkansasStateChamber.com.
Paying it forward is just one of the many stories you may hear this month during Fayetteville's Month of Compassion.
It's just a wonderful thing that Seven Hills did for me, and they're still doing it. I have so many people that's got my back that tells me all the time, you're doing a great job, we appreciate you. And it's so fulfilling for me to be able to be in this company and do the things that people did for me. So giving back is the best thing, I think, and I love it. And that's pretty much my story.
The city of Fayetteville is just one of 26 designated compassionate cities in the world and has designated February 2014 a month of compassion. We celebrate compassion in about 25 minutes here on Ozarks at Large.
The recent chemical spill in West Virginia left drinking supplies tainted, and it left some residents reconsidering their hometown roots.
You know, I'm going to have to go somewhere where the water has not been affected. It is so hard. I cannot live like this.
Coping with the spill, 1 month later, that's today, on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen from 3 to 6 this afternoon to 91.3 FM.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Tomorrow, college baseball season begins.
It does. The Arkansas Razorbacks take to the field tomorrow at 3:05.
That's right. I should say Division I baseball because the UAFS Lions have already started in Division II. But Division I baseball, such as the Arkansas Razorbacks, begins tomorrow afternoon against App State at Baum Stadium.
First pitch, 3:05?
Yep.
Okay.
And they're very good about that. If first pitch is supposed to be at 3:05, it's at 3:05.
Right. And that takes place inside Baum Stadium.
Yes.
It was built in 1996.
Right. 8 years ago.
8 years ago? No.
Are you? Oh, my gosh. Are you serious? 18?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Sure, because it's been there the whole... Oh, I just aged. Okay, anyway.
That's beside the point.
Right.
But it's received a lot of national attention since it was built.
Yes.
You're a baseball fan. I know that
yes,
you've
I
seen
am.
A lot of stadiums. So.
Yes. I've seen several college stadiums, and it is by far, I think, the best one that I've been to. It has been, Baseball America named it, shortly after it was built, the best in the country. And it's continually in the one, two, or three spot, depending on who is doing the survey, which sports stadium, mm-hmm. venue, or publication. But it's always in the top three.
Well, I know in January it came across my radar because it was ranked by Stadium Journey as the number three collegiate baseball stadium experience.
Yes.
And you, that's what you just said. It's usually in the top three.
Yep.
And so that was behind Duty Noble Field, which is home of Mississippi State Bulldogs, and just behind also the Carolina Stadium, which is home of the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Two other SEC schools,
right.
By the way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a fantastic venue. And Arkansas is usually either first or second in the country in attendance. If they're second, it's behind LSU, who has nice weather just about the entire year. But Arkansas last year was number two in attendance.
Well, that got me thinking, who's Baum? Why is
as
it?
As in Baum Stadium.
Right, as in Baum Stadium. So I never really knew who that was. And so for this month's What's in a Name installment in our What's in a Name series, I thought I would find out who Baum was. And as it turns out, the stadium is named after Charles Baum. He was one of the major players in the growth of Walmart. Baum passed away in 1992. However, but his daughter, Sally Frick of Fort Smith, is still alive and says he got his start in business with a different retailer.
He was the superintendent of Ben Franklin Stores. He would set up these stores, put them in, get merchandise in, and get them all set up. And that's how he met Sam Walton, because Sam had a Ben Franklin store.
Sally's husband, Elvin Frick.
We got a picture here in our library of Sam Walton and his brother and Willard and Charlie at one of those stores when they opened it. So they were all very close. And if you read his book, Made in America, Sam Walton's book, Charlie's mentioned in that book.
That would be Rob Walton and Willard Walker. Growing up in St. Louis, Sally remembers watching the Cardinals and to this day prefers baseball to other sports. Sally's great-grandparents were from Baden-Baden, Germany. The name Baum, meaning tree in German.
That's kind of an unusual name. when I was going to school, I was teased a lot and about the name of Baum. And I said, I never thought I would it would turn out that I would be ever so proud of it.
Though she hasn't been to Fayetteville in years, Sally will cut out any newspaper clippings about Baum Stadium and her father to send to remaining family in St. Louis. To find out how Baum Stadium came to be Baum Stadium, I got with Norm DeBryan, baseball coach at the University of Arkansas for 33 years, from 1970 to 2002. Coach DeBryan was contacted by the American Legion in the early 90s. The American Legion are longtime supporters of youth baseball. They needed funding to fix the lights at one of their fields. The Legion knew that DeBryan went to church with Mr. Baum and requested that he make the initial contact. Coach DeBryan obliged, but said he found that first phone call left him somewhat embarrassed.
So I call him, and I said, is this Charles Baum? Yes. I said, well, I'm Norm DeBryan, baseball coach. I said, do you usher at the 11:30 Mass? Because I had heard that. I did a little research, and he said, yes. And I said, okay. I said, the American Legion program is wanting some money for their lighting project or would like some help, and we know that you've been connected with Little League Baseball in the past. Boy, he hardly said anything. I'll never forget it. I get off the phone, and I'm thinking to myself, why didn't I make an appointment with him? Why didn't I go to him? I didn't do the right thing. So I just go on about my business.
A few weeks later, the American Legion commander called Coach DeBryan to thank him, but he didn't know what for. As it turns out, Baum had given the American Legion the $10,000 it needed for youth baseball.
That was that, so I call him again. I said, Charlie, this is Norm DeBryan. I had talked to you earlier. Thank you so much for what you did for American Legion Baseball. I said, do you ever drink coffee? He said, yes, we have a coffee clutch, yada, yada. He made it easy.
That cup of coffee led to a short but rich friendship. It was around 1991, and the University of Arkansas was about to join the Southeastern Conference. The baseball field was where the football practice fields currently are. While a step up from playing at the fairgrounds like they had in the past, George Cole Field was in need of renovation.
George Cole Field was nice in its day, but the AstroTurf was on there so long that the pad disintegrated between the AstroTurf and the asphalt. And so I remember in the Southwest Conference, Texas coming in here, and Cliff Gustafson, the Texas coach, telling me, Norm, we can't play on this. I mean, it's too dangerous. It's like playing on cement, and I mean, going to kill our third baseman or whatever. And so we were trying to upgrade, but we didn't have the money, didn't have the budget, and things like that.
At that first cup of coffee, Baum asked DeBryan what he planned to do with the facilities now that he was in the SEC. Baum committed to giving $250,000 to the renovations of George Cole Field. Soon after, he committed another $250,000 to the project. At the time, efforts were also underway for the construction of Bud Walton Arena, the Razorbacks basketball stadium. Then athletic director Frank Broyles and basketball coach Nolan Richardson approached Baum to contribute to that project. And Baum told them,
I don't have money for the basketball facility, but I'll give $500,000 to the baseball facility. And that made it $1 million straight up.
Coach DeBryan and his family formed a quick bond with Baum and his wife Nadine, the coach bringing his young daughter to play Uno with Baum as his health declined. He did not survive long after the $1 million commitment, passing away in June of 1992. Baseball fans wanted to see the renovations completed, but Coach Broyles said that they still needed more money. Close friend of Baum's, Willard Walker, whose son Johnny Mike played baseball for Arkansas in the 1970s, committed another $1 million to the project, but the Walkers wanted it named in Baum's honor. With funding in place, Frank Broyles had the vision that a new stadium should be constructed. And in 1996, a mid-season doubleheader against Auburn were the first games played in Baum Stadium at George Cole Field.
Baum Stadium is a state-of-the-art. Frank Broyles had a tremendous vision, talking about walking in on a concourse level and looking down on the field. So every seat would be a good seat. There would be no cross aisles and no type thing where you're standing in front of somebody. You know, I mean, that was a tremendous concept. And then big concourse, you know, where the concourse is here and the concessions are here, so you can buy a Coke or a hot dog, and still you can be on the concourse. You're not obstructing anybody. The people are down here looking at the field.
The University of Arkansas kept the name of the field after the former coach and athletic director, George Cole. They also kept some of the lights from the original location. They're still illuminating the field. 2 years after those first wins, Baum Stadium was named the number one college baseball facility in the nation by Baseball America.
Only regret would be that Charlie didn't see the fruition of everything. Maybe he has, you know.
Baum gave not only to university baseball, but also to basketball and other various youth sports. According to his daughter, Sally Frick, he loved children, always setting up a train set in store windows at Christmas for their amusement. As such, Arkansas Children's Hospital was also on Baum's list of charities. Residents of the area may recognize his late wife's name, Nadine, from the Walton Art Center's Nadine Baum Studios. It's the location for Theater Squared and the Community Creative Center. Married to Charles late in life, Nadine was not Sally's mother, but Sally still remembers Nadine as a very artistic person.
She could see an outfit, a dress or a coat or something, and she'd go home and make it. Didn't even have a pattern. But she was just very artistic. And she was so good at it, had a lovely home, and she's just a lovely person. So I'm glad to know that her art center is still there. I wish you could see these pillows that she made for me on my sofa in the living room. They are gorgeous. And she made them by hand. She was very artistic and very a loving person.
Sally Frick is Charles Baum's daughter and was thrilled to talk to me about her father. Proud to hear his name. Opening weekend for Razorback baseball in Baum Stadium at George Cole Field begins tomorrow afternoon at 3:05 p.m. against App State. Games continue Saturday and Sunday. For a complete schedule, visit ArkansasRazorbacks.com.
This is Ozarks Large. Time to give some stuff away.
That's right. We have quite the giveaway package, actually.
We do.
Four Malco movie passes.
Good for any Malco movie theater in our area.
That's right. Four tickets to National Theater Live's production of War Horse, which will be broadcast at Malco Razorback Theater in Fayetteville. That is on February 27th at 7 p.m.
So it's a stage production, but it's going to be broadcast to theaters across the country in high definition.
Right.
And we've got four tickets to that, separate from the four other movie vouchers
right,
we have.
You can use anytime.
Exactly. But the War Horse is on that specific date. Yes.
Also, two adult tickets and two student tickets to Trike Theater's production of The Fantastic Mr. Fox. Those shows are February 28th and March 1st and 2nd.
You'll be able to pick which of those dates.
Right.
And also, we'll learn more about that next week on an edition of Ozarks at Large. And tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, Shannon Wirth sits down with Antoinette Grajeda for a Valentine's Day edition of our Friday Music.
Right. She'll play some love songs. And in anticipation of that, we have a CD called Lionheart Love from Shannon Wirth.
Which I just listened to, coincidentally, last weekend at home. It's still a fantastic CD. So you've got a Shannon Wirth CD, four movie vouchers, four tickets to Fantastic Mr. Fox by Trike Theater, and four special event passes to the War Horse HD. All of that to
right.
One winner.
Popular Valentine's Day rhyme is roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, and so are you.
So we're going to ask you to write your own Valentine.
That's right.
Starting with roses are red, violets are blue. Mm-hmm. Finish it off, but here's the catch. You know who never gets a Valentine?
Cupid.
Never. No. He's out there working his little wings off all Valentine's Day. So we want you to write a Valentine to Cupid using the lines roses are red, violets are blue.
Finish it off.
Right.
And we can send those to
ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. One winner that we will announce tomorrow. Let your creative juices fly.
Next time on Ask Me Another, our house musician Jonathan Colton has clearly been complimented one too many times for his musical trivia skills, because I think it's gone to his head.
Jonathan Colton, oh Johnny, 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 Jonathan Colton.
Join me, Ophira Eisenberg, and genius Jonathan Colton for NPR's Hour of Puzzles, Word Games, and Trivia.
It's Ask Me Another, Saturdays at 11 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
Though this winter has seemed especially frigid, that doesn't mean that climate change isn't a reality. Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis speaks with one local climate researcher who explains how the changing climate could potentially impact the species native to different parts of the planet.
In the 2014 U.S. Climate Action Report, Secretary of State John Kerry took a firm stance on global climate change. He opened the report by saying that climate change is one of the most urgent and profoundly complex challenges we face. Secretary of State Kerry further made the case for taking action on climate change in citing the fifth assessment report by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, known colloquially as IPCC. According to the report, summertime Arctic sea volumes have shrunk by 70% during the past 35 years, and 12 of the hottest 13 years on record have occurred since 2000. With those figures, the Secretary of State asserted that climate change is real and that human beings are the cause. Climate change is caused, as has been argued by scientists for decades, by greenhouse gas emissions. But what would the world look like if nothing were done to curb those emissions that cause global warming? Enter Song Fong. He's a professor in the geosciences department at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville.
My research mostly focuses on climate change and physics that's behind the extreme events, including, for example, drought, and also the impact of climate change on water resources and agriculture.
Specifically, he's been applying one of several scenarios developed by the IPCC to climate change theory to see what the Earth's surface will look like by the end of this century. The particular scenario Fong is using is known as business as usual.
That means that there's no actions taken to reduce the greenhouse gas emission. For example, what we do today, we continue to do that.
Within this scenario, he predicts that temperatures will rise around the planet.
Based on this scenario, the annual temperature will increase more than 10 degrees Celsius in the Arctic regions. So that's about 18 degrees Fahrenheit. That will cause dramatic impact, especially the ice in Greenland, okay, or over the islands in the Arctic Oceans will melt. And also the tundra will push northward again when currently that are covered by ice.
But warming temperatures wouldn't be the only side effect of climate change. Fong says that precipitation would also be radically changed.
Based on this scenario, okay, the precipitation will increase in the middle and high latitude. So that means that, okay, in the middle high latitude, we'll see more snowfall. But in the tropical region, especially in the subtropical region, it will become drier.
In particular, the American Southwest, Mediterranean areas, and parts of Africa would be substantially drier. Essentially, regions that are already dry will become even drier, and already wet regions will become even wetter. Fong explains that these changes in precipitation are determined by atmospheric saturation, and with every degree of warming, the atmosphere's water-holding capacity also increases, resulting in less precipitation for those warm areas. And changes in temperature and precipitation would naturally bring changes in climate type for the affected areas. While the increasingly hot and dry regions may not be hospitable for human habitation or certain currently native plant species, other vegetation may arise in those areas.
The plants don't have lakes, right? We have lakes. If there's some place that's not good for us, we can move to a different place, right? But the tree or the other plants, they don't have lakes. So they cannot move. So when the climate is not suitable for them to grow, they just grow well. But climate may be suitable for other species. So in that case, for example, the invasive species will slowly take the territory of the native species.
Fong estimates that the climate type would change for roughly half the planet if the business-as-usual scenario holds true, leaving the future of food security for much of the planet's population uncertain. And perhaps that's one reason why the U.S. Climate Action Report for 2014 included the first-ever biennial report, outlining the federal government's plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions through the year 2020. In the Climate Action Report, Secretary of State Kerry acknowledges that fundamental change doesn't come easily or without a fight, but that the nation has already seen results from efforts to reduce emissions. He claimed that emissions in the U.S. have fallen by 6.5% since 2005, even during relative periods of growth in the economy. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
This is Ozarks at Large. Later this month, two celebrated singers will give one concert, one free concert, at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. Gladys Knight will perform on February 22nd. Also on the bill, Patti LaBelle.
I must have rehearsed my lines a thousand times.
The concert is a partnership between several entities, including Walmart, the NAACP Image Awards, the local chapter of the NAACP, and TV One, the broadcaster of the Image Awards. The award show, scheduled for the same night in Los Angeles, will include a remote feature from Northwest Arkansas involving LaBelle and Knight.
This is a first. This is the first time that anyone has done a remote Image Awards event, and it's the first of its kind here in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Sharonda L. Britton is Director of Marketing, Multicultural, African American, and Asian with Walmart. She says this month's concert represents an extension of events the company has been involved with that began in 2013.
We started last year during the same time, and we had a wonderful event called History Teaching History, where we brought in Tom Joyner and a live performance. We furthered that with the first ever Road to Essence Bentonville concert that was also free to the community. And I think that coming back and now illustrating this partnership and being able to continue to provide this level of access to not only Walmart associates, but the community members at large, it truly shows the commitment of the company to diversity and inclusion.
The concert is also a semi-official salute to the organization and development of the first ever local chapter of the NAACP in Northwest Arkansas. The organization formed during the last few months and celebrated its chartering earlier this month. John L. Colbert is the president of the NWA chapter, a chapter he says is focused on extending the national organization's mission to this region.
Which states that we wanted to ensure that the political, education, social, and economic equality arises for all people and to eliminate race-based discrimination, because we know that it exists some, so hopefully that the branch will help to promote that. And it's kind of ironic that we have been bombarded with several calls already with some concerns, so we feel that it was a good timing for us to organize and get the new branch here in Northwest Arkansas. I think it's going to be a very positive thing for the entire community in Northwest Arkansas.
The concert is an event that will bring many together in Rogers, but will also reach a TV audience of millions with a remote segment included in the Image Awards live telecast. John L. Colbert says the opportunity to have Northwest Arkansas included as part of the LA-based production is significant.
It will allow us to bring people of all races together just to showcase the African-American in a very positive image. And also when they come here and do the live broadcast with the locals, they can see that we are very diverse as well, and which is it speaks highly of the community in Northwest Arkansas.
John L. Colbert grew up in the eastern part of Arkansas, but he's lived in Northwest Arkansas for several years. He says the inclusion of this region as part of the Image Awards program is a testimony to the area's growing influence, but also an indication that this is a place that's become more diverse.
Been here for 40 years now. I've seen it go from just a few African Americans into what we have today, and I feel that this area really has changed, and I consider it to be a melting pot now.
Sharonda L. Britton with Walmart and an organizer of this month's concert says the show is an example of the type of event that represents an evolving region.
It makes for a more diverse community when you have, you know, not only diversity of thought, but diversity of backgrounds. When you have companies like Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, and then all of the talent that it brings in from all of the nation. And then from a Walmart perspective, a Walmart and Sam's Club perspective, you think about all of the different companies that service our business and the suppliers that they are bringing in from all over the country. It is truly becoming a very different landscape of what you would normally expect here. And I think that that's the big difference in the message that we really want to share out from Bentonville, is that there is diversity here. There's a community that celebrates inclusion, and we have those celebrations together.
The Patti LaBelle Gladys Night Concert will be Saturday, February 22nd at the John Q. Hammond Center in Rogers. The concert is free, but does require an RSVP. Reservations may be made through the website imageawardsrsvp.com. Organizers ask that audience members be 21 and over and arrive by 5 p.m. And for more information about the newly established Northwest Arkansas chapter of the NAACP, you can go online to nwanaacp.org.
Last fall, Fayetteville competed in the International Compassion Games, becoming just one of 26 compassionate cities worldwide. Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan proclaimed February 2014 as a month of compassion in that city. The organization Compassion Fayetteville has planned a collection of compassion events and activities throughout the month. Here on Ozarks at Large, you'll hear stories of compassion. We start today with Christina Andazola, now a receptionist and client caseworker at Seven Hills Homeless Shelter. The year 2008 was a difficult one for Christina.
I actually got a divorce early in 08. I had a young baby and two other children that were a little bit older. And when I got my divorce, my husband just basically left and left me with all the bills. And I had quit my good job to stay home with the baby, so I didn't have a job anymore. So it was pretty much a struggle when he left. And I didn't know what I was going to do, but I did work a lot of odd jobs. And I did what I could and tried to work during the day. So 08, it started off with the divorce. And then in July, I lost my, well, actually September 3rd, I lost my brother. And he was my only brother growing up. I have other brothers and sisters, but they're not in this state and I've never met them. But my brother passed away of a drug overdose. And with that being said, my mother, which is paranoid schizophrenic, that was living with me after my divorce, had a very hard time, so I had to commit her. So that was three things that happened. And then the kicker was at the end, December 8th. I went back into the hospital after a year and found out that the fibroblastic tumor that I had had grown bigger. It was the size of a tangerine at first, and then it was the size of a grapefruit. So they said, we're going to have to give you a hysterectomy. But while we wait for your medical papers, you'll have to be on pain pills. So for 6 months, I had to take pain pills, and it was really extremely hard not to take them because I felt like I was in labor. And finally, I had my surgery for that on June the 16th of the next year, 09. Well, all this time, I'm still, you know, working odd jobs and trying to get by. And I came into Seven Hills just to get a job. I saw an ad in the paper for a front desk. So I was like, I can do that. So I came in and I applied, but they'd just hired somebody. So they told me about the FICASO program, which the FICASO program helps people get into a place and helps them with their bills and rent until they're able to stand on their own. So with all this, I even had a case manager that came in every week, and she gave me my self-esteem back, I guess you could say, and she gave me hope.
She would always tell me, you can do this. It was really hard. I was a single mom of three, and I was taking care of my mother. So I was trying to find a job Monday through Friday days so that I wouldn't have to leave my kids with my mom that was sick after school. And I was able to take care of them and on the weekends. And it's extremely hard for a single mother to find hours like that in Northwest Arkansas. So for 10 months, I went to budgeting classes. I did my resume over. I looked for jobs. I wasn't able to find a job. It was really hard. Even during the Christmas season, I went with my friends to Black Friday. Well, they took their wallets and their cash to buy gifts. I took my clipboard and my pen so I could fill out applications to get a job. And even that didn't work. And so February came around and I was 10 months in. And that's usually the max. And
in the FICASA
program, yeah. And
you never lost your home.
No, I came very, very close. And after the 10 months, you know, I graduated the FICASA program, but I still didn't have a stable job and I didn't know what I was going to do. I was sick on the couch. There was a big snowstorm in the middle of, or the beginning of February, and Miss Cynthia Seidman called me and she said, we'd like to give you a job. So February 14th of that year, I came in and I interviewed and I got the job and I started on the 23rd of February, and that's almost 3 years now, and I love my job here. I get to help people every single day, and on top of that, for the last 8 to 9 months, I've been doing FICASA case management. So I get to go into homes and I get to tell single mothers, you can do this. And I promise you that just hearing that gives you so much support as a single mother, as somebody that's having a really hard time, just somebody being there and showing up and, you know, giving their all to help you change your life. And so for me being able to do that, it's awesome. I mean, it just gives me so much gratification just knowing that they may be in a hard place right now, but I know they can make it because I'm making it. I'm able to take care of my kids and my mother. I'm no longer on food stamps. And that's a wonderful feeling. I don't have to answer to anybody just because I need to buy food for my family. I can buy it myself. And it's just a wonderful thing that Seven Hills did for me. And they're still doing it. I have so many people that's got my back that tells me all the time, you're doing a great job. We appreciate you. And it's so fulfilling for me to be able to be in this company and do the things that people did for me. So giving back is the best thing, I think, and I love it. And that's pretty much my story.
With her oldest son now in college and the others old enough to stay home alone for a bit, Christina is able to work the hours necessary to support them. Her kids are in awe of their mother's hard work.
My oldest son is very proud of me. I finally moved from the house that we lived in for 10 years, and we've moved to a nicer house, more space for us, and I bought a car. I don't have car payment. My kids are ecstatic, actually. I'm able to get them what they need instead of having to just, well, we'll see if I can do it. We'll see if I can do it, and wanting to do it, but just not able to because the finances weren't there. But now it's, what can you work for? I mean, if you really want it, what are you willing to do? Are you willing to clean the yard, you know, whatever? And they work for their money, too. I mean, my oldest son not only has a full scholarship to college, he also works. And he has his own place. So I think that it showed him a lot for me to not give up, to not, you know, give in to, you know, all the negative things that other people were telling me, you know. I heard, you'll never make it, you know, it's just too hard for single mothers these days, and my ex-husband used to tell me all the time I was never going to make it without him, but I have, and I'll never look back, because I'm perfectly happy now, And I get up every morning with a smile on my face. When I come to work, it's not a chore. It's just what I do, helping people. And I don't think there's not a better job than that. Not in my mind.
Christina Antizola is with Seven Hills Homeless Shelter. February has been designated a month of compassion in Fayetteville. For information on events, visit compassionfayetteville.wordpress.com. We'll share another story of compassion on a coming edition of Ozarks at Large.
It is Thursday, February 13th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
With us, Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Here's our daily Valentine's Day installment.
Because tomorrow is Valentine's Day.
But these are events for Saturday, because we already talked about tomorrow yesterday.
I know. And the whole weekend. It's Valentine's Day weekend.
Oh, yes. And we have many.
Yes.
So on Saturday, there is a Chocolate Lovers Festival. From 9 to 3 at the Inn of the Ozarks Convention Center in Eureka Springs. It costs $12 for adults, and there's everything, including chocolate fountains.
Once you get in, you eat what you want?
You can do it one of two ways. You can eat what you want, or you can do like you do with the one in Fayetteville and box it up and take it with you.
Okay.
Sounds wonderful. It is Sweetheart Weekend at Hobbs State Park. An Eagle Watch cruise with lunch. Adventurous Trails and Resort. This starts at 11 o'clock on Saturday, and you need to call for reservations at 789-5000. That's $60 a couple.
Do we know what's for lunch?
We do.
Oh.
Parmesan chicken, ranch potatoes, soup, rolls, a salad, and chocolate sheet cake.
So there's a bird hierarchy. There's a bird you look for. There's a bird you eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's Northwest Arkansas. You eat chicken.
All right. Hey, I got no problem with that.
Sona Pops is Saturday night. Symphony of Northwest Arkansas, an evening of romance, everything from Puccini to Rodgers and Hammerstein. That's at 7:30 at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. Tickets start at $28.
Okay.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night, beginning at 10 p.m. This Friday is the Valentine's Day edition of Shades of Jazz, and I will present romantic music of all ilks. Lost love, found love, elusive love. We'll hear from Kurt Elling, Diane Schur, Bobby McFerrin, Chiara Civillo, and even Van Morrison and Georgie Fame. Tune in this Friday at 10 p.m. for the Valentine's Day edition of Shades of Jazz.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Springdale.
Right up the road from the station.
There you go.
There you go. Would like to remind our listeners that we have a giveaway that we will announce tomorrow. It's a pretty hefty giveaway for one lucky listener.
Right. The latest Shannon Wurst CD, four movie passes, four special event passes to see the staged edition of Warhorse in HD, and four tickets to see Trike Theater's version of The Fantastic Mr. Fox. All of that to one winner.
Right. And since we will be announcing that tomorrow on Valentine's Day, February 14th, we have a Valentine's Day themed kind of question for you.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Complete that Valentine as if you were sending it to
Cupid,
who never gets a Valentine.
Yeah, poor Cupid. You can send those to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
And we will have a special judge.
We're not really sure who that judge
is
yet.
It won't be us.
No.
It won't be us.
Mm-hmm. Will not be Antoinette either.
No, it will not be a producer of Ozarks at Large. It'll be somebody else mm-hmm. who will select that.
That's right.
All right. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Antoinette and I will have a brand new edition, including Antoinette sitting down with Shannon Wurst to hear a couple of songs tomorrow on a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And then you, me, together Sunday morning at 9 for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
That's right. Until then, thank you so much for listening and have a good Thursday.